You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 20 December. We've got U.S. personal income spending data due later today. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you loud and recorded from my remote studio in Rosebank. This is the last show for the year. We'll be back on 6 Jan. Huge thanks to everyone who's listened in. And enjoy your holidays if you are taking a break. On the show today, Kia Nonyana. He's Scope Prime. I want to chat gold, Sasol, commodities, and get his highlights from 2024. And what about that US tech run? It's been another stellar year. Can it continue into 2025? Johan Els, Old Mutual Group Chief Economist. Inflation, rate cutting outlook for 2025. Could we see a US rate hike late in the year? The markets think there is certainly a chance. And local CPI, is the MPC just now targeting the 3% part of that range? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Kia Nonyana, he's a Scope Prime. Kia, appreciate the time. 2024, a good year for almost anything that wasn't a non-gold commodity. What would be, if you look back at the year, what would be your highlight?
You know, the way I would characterize it is AI chips and politics. And why I say that is that we had so much geopolitical risk from the Middle East to the Ukraine. And then we had 10 major national elections worldwide. And what we saw in those national elections is that the incumbents actually retreated in electoral support, which showed the discontent that the normal person was feeling with the inflation. But yet on the market, you could have thrown darts at whatever asset, and you probably would have done well and got inflation beating returns.
That's a great point, because to your thing, there was uncertainty and worries all over the place. As you say, elections, big ones, small ones, successful ones, and some less so. But markets, and it's bond markets, it's crypto markets, it's equity markets, just seem to not care. They seem to be saying, you know what, interest rates are coming down, and that's all that matters to us.
And you would have probably even seen it on our local market. I know. I was speaking at a business school early on this year during the budget speech. And essentially what I was telling the people who were attending is that my view is that I'm going to bet on governments. And I mean, it's literally just a situation where if you took on some duration into your portfolio with fixed income assets, I mean, you got returns of year to date over 23%. and essentially when last did our bond market ever return that? Even our local equity market, since the formation of the government of national unity, if you have not been in stocks, you literally have not done anything this year. And looking at JC bond statistics over the last few months, over the year, you'd have seen foreigners have piled into our bonds, but have not put any money into our equity market. Yeah. And it's just genuinely they have not really gotten that compounded growth.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you point out, foreigners have come for our bonds, not yet for our equities. If they do, things are going to get wild. I mentioned that it's been a tough year for commodities, aside from gold. We'll touch on that in a moment. Your take on commodities. I mean, it's a wide basket, but PGMs under pressure, oil under pressure, coal, iron ore. I mean, almost across the swath, commodities had a lackluster year. Is this just China not coming to the party?
I think, you know, Si, China has struggled to instill consumer confidence, because all through the years, they've had great consumer confidence with great industrial production. So now with the fact that I think they've reached capacity in industrial production, you start to see that supply for the first time next year, will have actually an oversupply of oil. And then you're finding there's still overcapacity. And all this was to provide commodities to China. And without China, where else is growth coming from? The U.S. has great industrial growth, but I think it's moving more into technology-based. But real bread and butter industrial capacity was coming from China, and it's really just dissipated that demand.
It absolutely has. And you mentioned the oversupply of oil. I mean, one of the Donald Trump policies that he says he will implement when he gets sworn in next month is drill, baby, drill. I mean, the OPEC and OPEC plus sort of a control of the oil market is just slipping away as America just drills more and more oil and becomes a net exporter.
You know, global oil demand has been very disappointing. And I think I anticipate the same for 2025. And that just has to do with global economic growth. Mm-hmm. The world is going to be growing at about 1.6% in anticipation for 2025. The majority of that growth is going to be coming from the US. China's slowing down to closer to 4%. South Africa has little to no growth, if we're going to use that as a proxy for Africa. So essentially, with this U.S. supply growth, where is this oil going to go to? And essentially, OPEC Plus has a headache on their hands.
Well, so does Sasol. I don't know if you're brave enough to have a view on Sasol. I just keep on looking in wonderment. I mean, there's a lot around Sasol. It's more than just the oil price, but it certainly has had a horror year. At some point it turns. I just don't know where.
You know, I often sit back in my quiet moments and think about Sasol. And the question that I think investors need to ask themselves is Sasol going to go out of business in the next 5 years? Mm-hmm. And the answer to that is an easy answer. It's probably not.
Yeah.
But one thing that I'm always quite concerned about with stocks and companies is, can management control what they can control? And for me, with Sasol, the answer is no. The management have not been able to control what they can control. Mm. I mean, you can't control the rand, you can't control price, you can't control margins. But what you can control is just production and being able to control cost and control capital and have operational improvements. And Sasol has been unable to do that. So right now, I'm taking a wait and see approach.
Yeah, I'm sitting on the same sideline with you. We'll wait and see. Gold, it feels weird. I'm a gold bull because I like things that go up. Central bankers have been buying. There's been a sort of almost a weaponization of the dollar. Gold almost just to me, if you ask me about gold, the answer is it's going higher. It just almost feels too easy, which always bothers me. So I thought I'll check in with you. Are you also bullish gold, or have you got a bear case for us?
You know, I think I have a bullish case, as you say. I mean, I think it has to do with the falling rates and the opportunity cost of holding non-yielding assets like gold, and it really gives impetus to stimulating that investment demand. But also just seeing central bank demand for gold has been so high in 2024, and they've been holding it as a reserve, and also just as a hedge against geopolitical risk. I think with the election of Donald Trump, there's going to be heightened trade war tariffs, and there's going to be also heightened geopolitical risk in the Middle East, in Ukraine. And I think that as gold is almost seen as a safe haven, I think that will continue.
Yeah, I agreed with you 100%. You upfront said AI was one of the big stories for 2024. It absolutely was. And we've seen US markets, some 30% higher year to date, repeated all-time highs from S&P and NASDAQ. Does this insane bull run, because let's be clear, 2023 was also an excellent year for US equities. Can it continue? I mean, valuations are stretched, but I don't know. Americans don't seem to always care, or maybe not even Americans. Global investors don't seem to care always.
You know, when there is high valuation such as this, there's always a logical argument as to why it can even go higher. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I had an interesting conversation with a colleague recently, and they just went to the simplicity of net asset value. I mean, let's take Microsoft as an example. Mm-hmm. The net asset value just means, what do I really own in this company if I had to take all the assets, pay back all the debtors, and what's left over? Microsoft has a net asset value just upwards of $120 billion. But its market capitalization is almost $3 trillion, which tells you that multiple is almost close to 40 times more. So now the question is, can Microsoft in the future give you earnings that justify 40 times the valuation of its current assets? And essentially, that is the question that you need to ask yourself. But I always say, during times like this, there's always a logical argument as to why the market can go higher.
Yeah, I mean, I raise your Microsoft, Apple, trading at 9.7 times price to sales, highest in its history. The average is 2.8. These are epic levels. These are wild levels. We'll park it there. That's Kenyon Yama. Scope Prime, appreciate the time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Johan Els. You find him, of course, at Old Mutual. Johan, appreciate the time. A good year for central bankers in that they've managed inflation lower. We've had no recession. A few rate cuts that came perhaps later than many would have hoped for. But broadly, if we go back to worries about hard landings and all of that, central bankers around the world, including our own, I think they deserve a pat on the back.
Yes, absolutely. We gave them a lot of criticism in the upcycle of interest rates, but they managed to get a soft landing after all, especially in the US, where there were lots of fears about that hard landing. But you're right, across the globe, they managed inflation lower, as we wanted them to do, without hurting the economies too much.
Is there the concern then is that inflation might not quite be down? We've had some US data out. Of course, our own local inflation is actually below the target range. If we look towards 2025, I mean, what are we looking for in inflation? A lot of Trump policies, depending which he decides to implement, if any, are inflationary. You're thinking around inflation in 2025.
Yeah, I think we're in for a period of uncertainty because exactly what you said there, Trump's policies, if implemented fully in terms of how he promised that during the election cycle, will be inflationary. Mm-hmm. So the Fed will be very concerned about that. But the Fed's pragmatic approach, I think, is the correct one, where they said exactly because there's uncertainty of how quickly those policies will be implemented, the Fed said they're going to wait until implementation and only then model the impact on the economy and only then react in terms of interest rate cycles. But I think markets will, of course, look forward and markets will anticipate that higher inflation and markets' reaction might force the Fed's hand. So I think next year we might see the Fed continuing to cut rates in the first several months of the year, but from around mid-year onwards, the concerns about inflation and that potential actual pressure on inflation could lead the Fed to stop the cutting cycle and maybe start a renewed hiking cycle to anticipate or to fight that inflation pressure that's coming from Trump's policies.
So possible, and we're talking US here, possible rate hikes really are on the cards. I mean, I know that the US rates markets are suggesting at one point, I think there was a 26% chance. This is a real possibility in the US towards the end of 25.
That's a real possibility, yes. And again, lots of uncertainty around that view because of the potential for Trump not to implement fully his policies. But I think that's the realistic view. We have to anticipate that there's going to be rate hikes before the end of next year. I think the Fed will be very circumspect about that, not wanting to hurt the economy too much, because one of the scenarios out there is still that, you know, the economy has been resilient, as you said at the start, but that we might still see a hard landing sometime in the first part of next year. So I think we set up for much more volatility in that cycle in the US. And that's what markets don't like. And therefore, I think market volatility will be the name of the game next year.
If we bring it home local, I mean, our target range is 3-6%. The governor talks 4.5. We know there's debates ongoing about whether we should change our inflation target. How's IMPC going to respond? I mean, our current inflation is sub that 3% lower end of the range, never mind the 4.5.
Yeah, absolutely. Inflation, well, I don't think we've got any inflationary pressures in the economy at the moment. But as a good central banker, our central bank is thinking about the potential risks out there, those US issues that we talked about. So I think we're going to see more rate cuts in South Africa, but probably only 2 or 3 of 25 basis points each. I think in terms of the target, I absolutely for a lower target. I don't think the opportune time is yet. This needs to be buy-in from politicians and those administered price set us. So I don't think the time is yet. But with inflation where it is now, I think the Reserve Bank might actually use the full target range. They previous years targeted 6% in the 3-6% target range. Under Lesetja Hanyahu, he's been targeting 4.5%. And I think we might see the Reserve Bank actually using that target range, as they might very well, because that's the range. They can target the lower end of that range without having to adjust the target itself. So I think perhaps that is an opportune time as well, because most forecasts now foresee inflation actually below 4% deep into the second half of next year. So inflation seems under control for now. And then Reserve Bank might think that let's use the full range of that target range that we've got available to us.
That's a complete light bulb moment for me. I'd never thought of that. And you're 100% right. At one point, it was sort of targeting the upper end, then the middle end. They can just go and essentially target that bottom end of the range. We almost don't need to change our inflation targeting because it is explicitly 3-6. We don't need to change it to 3. The central bank can just say it's now effectively targeting 3, and it then gives them a little bit of wiggle room. But to your point, it does mean that anyone is hoping for a lot of aggressive cuts in 2025, just not going to happen.
Especially after Trump's winning the US election.
Yeah.
So I think we must accept that rates might come down another couple of times, but not significantly more. You know, with a lower formal target range, we can then be more competitive globally.
Yeah.
But as you say, yeah, they don't have to yet. I don't think the time is opportune yet, because if you go for a 3%, 3 midpoint, then you can essentially go towards 2.
Yeah.
I don't think the time for that is opportune yet. We need a slight cycle here. So in terms of growth, there's some improvement on the structural issues, but we need the cyclical part as well to kick in. So
yeah,
that will help. Certainly the rate cutting cycle, lower inflation on its own is helping consumers as we stand here.
What about local GDP into next year? We had a horror Q3 number, and we understand that was agriculture down at what, -28.8%. The president has said he wants 3.25% next year for GDP. That seems a lot. What's a realistic target coming from yourself?
Yeah, I think because we sort of addressing the structural issues, the electricity one seems to be solved at least for now. We need to do a lot more there. But for now, in terms of the growth that we anticipate, we've got the electricity for that. We're busy working on the others. There's some improvement on Transnet's volume, so some of that will help. So the structural issues, some improvement already. And then the cyclical part, much lower inflation, that helps consumers. Mm-hmm. And then lower interest rates are helping. So the cyclical part kicking in as well. So I think we can see growth north of 2% next year from the dismal anticipated 0.5 this year. So north of 2, but then you sort of see that the cyclical boost that we've got now eases off again. So I think in 2026, again, just below 2%. But the medium-term path is still clear towards 2.5 to 3. But to expect north of 3% next year is just unlikely.
Yeah, but even in the medium term, a 3% GDP would be such a game changer. We need more, but it would help with everything, particularly, I suspect.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And unemployment as well. We'll leave it there. Johannes, Old Mutual, always appreciate the insights. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
That's it for today. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again, 6 Jan, Chantal Marks, looking ahead to 2025.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.